Charlotte, I'm loving these roses. This Bathsheba climber is going to be something.
It's something, isn't it? Yeah, it's something.
I guess you can tell. We get just a little bit excited about new rose introductions here at the Rose Chat Podcast. This week's guest is Michael Marriott from David Austin Roses, and Teresa's going to tell us a little bit about today's guest.
Today, we are continuing in our series of the new rose introductions for 2018. This is always an exciting time for rose lovers, and 2018 promises to be a very special year. We are hearing words like beautiful, disease-resistant, and fragrant. Yep, that's music to our ears. Well, speaking of music to our ears, Michael Marriott, the charming senior rosarian of David Austin Roses, joins us today to share their 2018 introductions and so much more. When Michael's around, you know we'll talk of fragrance. These three David Austin beauties are bound to get your attention, so you won't want to miss a minute of this episode of Rose Chat. We're glad you're here, so let's get started.
It's time for the Rose Chat Podcast, a podcast dedicated to celebrating the world's most beloved flower, the rose. Join award-winning gardeners Chris Van Cleef and Teresa Byington as they chat with rose lovers and experts from around the globe. With each episode, you'll gain valuable knowledge and insights to achieve the rose garden you've always dreamed of. Listen now as we explore the world of roses.
Try Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with a truly all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure and alfalfa teas. Easy to brew and use on all indoor and outdoor plants. Find them online at manuretea.com.
Hey y'all, it's Chris Van Cleef. I'm the creator of the Rose Chat Podcast. For me, growing roses has become a passion. My membership in the American Rose Society has helped me to create the rose garden of my dreams, right in my own backyard. I also enjoy the camaraderie and support of a network of rose growers who are eager to share, learn, and grow together. To learn more about membership in the American Rose Society, visit their website, rose.org.
Hey, Michael, welcome back to Rose Chat.
Hello. Very nice to talk to you again.
Well, it's so lovely to have you. You know, Michael, we've come to that time of year when even though we still have beautiful roses out in our gardens, we're beginning to dream of what's coming next.
Absolutely. It's always an exciting time. And all the rose breeders are a very dedicated bunch of people. And so always good to see what wonderful new varieties and have been introduced. And they're making a lot of the breeders around the world are making good, very good headways in disease resistance, especially, but just introducing new types of roses as well. So it's always interesting to see what's going to be coming next year.
Well, it is an exciting time. And so Chris and I've had a chance to look at these new roses that are coming, and we're sure that you're going to be making some dreams come true with these. So let's get started.
Okay. So the first one that I'd like to talk about is called Roald Dahl. Roald Dahl, of course, was the very famous author who wrote Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and all sorts of wonderful other children's books. And it was last year, it was the 100th anniversary of his birth. And he over here has started up a charity for very sick children. And so we thought it was a very good name for the rose. And at Chelsea Flower Show, when we launched it, we had his wife come along. And one of the stories that he wrote was, of course, James and the Giant Peach.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got this sculptor to make this huge peach out of bronze. And it was about 5 feet high. So that rather dominated our stand at Chelsea, but it looked very good. And so that was a really good launch, and had got lots of publicity about it. But the rose itself is very aptly colored as well, because it's very peachy colored, very sort of apricot shade, lovely full petal flower, wonderful fragrance, a sort of lovely tea type fragrance with a bit of fruity elements in it. and super, super healthy. You look at the leaves and you can see, oh yeah, that's going to be a really very healthy variety. One of the other things we noticed about it also, it just repeats very quickly. We started to introduce a few varieties now. Olivia Rose Austin is certainly one that starts flowering very early in the season and then repeats incredibly quickly. Desdemona is another one. And this one, over here in the UK, most of the varieties are still thinking about getting cranked up for their sort of second flush. Roald Dahl is well into its second flush already, so a very quick repeater. And just covered in flowers as well. Absolutely superb.
When I first saw this one, it reminded me of Lady of Shalott, which is actually blooming in my garden right now. How does the color compare to that rose?
Not quite so rich as Lady of Shalott. Just a lovely, soft, peachy color. When the buds are just starting to show their color, then it's a really, really rich, lovely, rich apricot color. But as they open, it fades off slightly. And then as the flower ages even more, then pales off even more. And I always like that. Rose breeders used to want sort of constant color from day one to the end. And I always thought that was rather boring. Actually, it gives a rather boring look to the to the overall effect. So we've always liked to have a color change in the flowers. And this one, yeah, as I say, starts really rich apricot in bud and pales off to quite a pale color. And it's just a very different habit. Lady of Shalott is a big shrub. You know, she'll easily get up to 5-6 feet, and we've got it growing as a climber up to 8 or 10 feet, and quite loose petaled as well. Whereas Roald Dahl is a much more compact shrub, maybe about 4 feet tall, maybe 3 foot across. And the flowers are not so much on top, but just all around the shrub, really. More of a cup-shaped flower as well.
Well, that's certainly beautiful. And you've said all the things that we long to hear: strong fragrance, repeat flowering, and excellent disease resistance. So it's got all the buzzwords attached to it for sure.
Yeah, it's very impressive, actually. I mean, when we introduce a variety, you know, we've known it for many years already, but it's not until you plant it into the garden you really get to know it, and maybe find out what its real character is, and maybe a few little foibles, hopefully not too many. This has been really impressive in the garden. Very good indeed.
Now, tell us a little bit more about the fragrance of this rose. You know, there are lots of fragrance nuts, and I edit a newsletter for the American Rose Society called The Fragrant Rose, and they're always interested in fragrance.
And so you should be, too. I mean, what's a rose without a fragrance? It's just an absolutely crucial part of it, isn't it? It just gives the whole character. I wrote an article in the ARS magazine, and suggesting that really, if the rose didn't have a fragrance, you know, would it have been as popular as it is today? And I think maybe not. I don't know. The Roald Dahl fragrance is the classic sort of tea fragrance. Of course, tea fragrance smells like a freshly opened packet of tea, and then it's got sort of subtle notes in it. So always when you smell a rose, don't just sort of give it a quick sniff and sort of then, you know, put your nose away. Give it a good sniff and give it several sniffs and smell. Always very important to smell several different flowers, because one might smell completely different to the other, or one might not smell at all and the other one smells fantastically well, and smell at different times of day. Smelling roses is a bit of an art, really, but it's a very nice art to get into, and very easy one as well. You don't need any training, just get down there and sniff your roses. It's got, if you sort of smell it several times, you'll hopefully find a few sort of fruity notes in there as well. The dark fruits, you know, sort of like things like damsons and blackberries and maybe blueberries as well in there, and also some leafy notes as well. So leafy notes, what's a leafy note? Well, it's a bit like you smell when you sort of crush a leaf, or maybe a grassy sort of note as well, which is often characteristic of the tea fragrance.
Sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
There is no one who can tell us about fragrance quite like you do, Michael. We are there. We can smell it. We are there. When you start describing, we are there.
Well, I always say, tell people as a joke, you know, I've learned all I have from Robert Culkin, who was a retired nose. came up several times a year to smell roses, and I had this terrible, terrible job of having to spend the whole day walking around the garden smelling roses. I mean, what a what a terrible job, eh?
That's a tough life. Yeah.
One of the things I have to do is for David Austin, honestly.
Well, I get the pleasure of introducing roses and other plants to my grandson, and who's almost 4, and he was here recently. And I just was snapping pictures right and left because he loves to put his nose in those roses. So, you know, it does start very early. They know there's something different.
Yeah, exactly the same. My grandchildren are a similar sort of age, and they were over recently. They live in Colorado, and so they don't come over very often. But yeah, they were very enthusiastic about smelling roses. Really good.
Mm-hmm. So what's next?
Next variety, Imogen. This is it's quite different, really, to any of the other Austins we've introduced in the past. It's a soft yellow. We've had some soft yellows in the past, but it's a sort of a different sort of flower. It's quite a sort of flat flower, beautiful little button eye, much richer color in the middle, quite a rich yellow in the middle, but really quite pale on the outside. And when you look at flowers like this, you think, oh, well, you know, the petal in the middle is a rich yellow and that on the outside is a soft yellow. But in fact, if you plucked one of those petals from the middle, you'd find it's in fact a very similar color to the outside. And it's just the effect of so many petals being close together creates that sort of richer color. And if you look at our catalog, you'll see that we split it up. We split up the Austin roses into different groups. So we've got the old roses, the Leander group, the Musk group, the Alba group. And one of the groups that we've started 3 or 4 years ago was the Some Other English Roses group, the old roses, they're originally based on the true old roses. The Leander group on that rose called Leander, which is a rather modern sort of appearance, and then there's these roses that really come from a really mixed background. They don't really belong to any of those other groups. So we just decided to call them some other English roses. And it's got other varieties like Princess Anne in there, which has got a very interesting background as well. So, if you look at this rose, you know, if you get your eye into what the Austin roses look like, you'll notice it has sort of a subtle difference to it. These flat flowers, button eye. The flowers are produced in sort of fairly sort of bunches, about 3, 4, 5, 6, something like that, on the end of stems. And when it's a young plant, it looks sort of slightly upright and ungainly, maybe. But as it fills out, as it matures, then it produces wonderful plant covered in these soft yellow flowers, and very attractive it is too. Very, very different character to anything else, really.
The picture I'm looking at is absolutely outstanding. I mean, you can just dive into this picture. It is truly the softest yellow I've ever seen. And I love a button eye. There's just something about it. So this one is just yummy for sure.
Yeah, button eyes, I quite agree. The button eyes in the middle of the flowers is of roses is wonderful. It's very characteristic of the true old roses. The Gallicus.
Madame Hardy would be the one that first comes to mind. That green button eye, just, oh my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah.
I dream of that.
Wonderful. Yeah. And also very healthy. I mean, we are really introducing extremely healthy varieties these days. Fragrance not so strong. it's one of those fragrances that's difficult to characterize, but just maybe you've got a bit of fresh apple in there. But just, you know, just a nice fragrance, and nothing you can stick your finger on exactly. And the picture, I think you've got the picture of it with the sort of the bluish background, have you? And I think that's the one we'll be using in the new catalogue when it's out later this year or earlier next year. And it goes very well with blue plants. So, you know, I'm always a great advocate of planting roses with perennials and annuals and biennials as well, and especially anything blue.
A blue delphinium with this one is going to be out of this world.
Absolutely, yeah. And geraniums, campanias, a whole range of course wonderful blue plants. Love in the Mist, you know, Nigella. Do you call it Love in the Mist over there?
We do. We do. I have that in my garden, and Stokes Aster. It's going to be great with this one.
Yeah. And one of my favorite plants, I don't know if you have it over there, is called Phacelia. It's an annual. It's called it's spelled Phacelia. And it's an annual that grows very fast, self-seeds itself around the place, but it's so attractive to bees and insects, and which is so important to encourage that in your gardens. And that, of course, helps with controlling other pests in your garden. So it's a wonderful plant, very good for the soil too.
And I'll have to look for that. I don't think I've seen that, but I'm definitely going to be on the lookout for it.
Oh, it's a wonderful plant. Phacelia tanacetifolia is the full name of it. So if you Google it, you'll soon see it. Wonderful plant. Yeah, I grow a lot of it in my garden, and if it gets a bit overzealous with self-seeding itself around the place, then it's the easiest plant to pull out. Wonderful plant.
Now, Michael, this last rose has really got my attention. You know, not only do I love these colors, but it's a climber, and I love climbers. You know, I've been trying to cover up my big ugly fence for about 3 years, so I think I found a spot for this one. So this is a Bathsheba.
Yeah, not a good one for people whose first language is not English. It's got the TH and the SH in there, so especially people with a French background, they struggle a bit. But Bathsheba, named from Thomas Hardy's Far From the Madding Crowd book. It's very striking rose, very rich color, lovely big flowers, and the fragrance is really strong as well too. It's sort of that classic fragrance you find in the Austin roses, that really strong myrrh fragrance. In this country, it'll grow up to maybe 8 feet or so, but I'm sure in your climate, Chris, it'll soon zip up to 10 feet, no problem at all. And it's got lovely dark stems as well, so even when not in flower, the stems are beautiful, and nice dark leaves as well. So a very striking rose, and you can see also from the photograph, there's sort of this palish halo of paler petals around the outside. And if you look very closely at the flower, you'll notice actually that the top side of the petals is this sort of rather rich apricot color, whereas the underside is more of a yellow color. But the overall effect is beautiful, really lovely. We've got the Austin roses. There's some wonderful climbers in there now, and I think it's so much better than a lot of the climbers that were introduced in sort of during the 20th century. You know, some of they very mean of their basal shoot production, so they end up as sort of plants with one stem or two stems and all the flowers and leaves at the top. Whereas the Austin climbers seem to have this natural ability to produce lots and lots of stems from the base and produce flowers really from the ground upwards. It always amazes me how they do that, and just look absolutely superb. So this will be no exception.
I feel like I have to give a public apology to the Albrighton Rambler, because I planted her and she's beautiful and just keeps going in spite of the fact that I let a very hardy morning glory just about choke her out. I noticed she's still blooming. Still smiling, but the morning glory is going to have to be hacked back for sure. So it's like, oh dear, you know, those things, they just get ahead of you. And so she's just about to be coughed out, but she's thriving in spite of the morning glory.
And I had an interesting report from Peter Schneider up in Ohio, who he's zone 5A or something like that. And he's saying how very winter hardy it is up there. And so he's very pleased with it.
Yeah, it bounces right back here. It bounces.
Yeah.
And we had a crazy spring. We had hot, cold, and it bounced right back.
Right. Yeah. Yes. It's your various climates over there in the States are very challenging, aren't they?
Yeah, we're not easy over here. You know, no. Chris talks about one thing and I talk about something entirely different. Now, Peter over in Ohio and I are having similar situations for our gardens, but very different from Birmingham to Indiana.
Yes, and Birmingham, UK as well.
Yeah.
Just up the road from here. Because, yes, I mean, I think the coldest we got last winter was about 5 degrees below freezing. We did get a late frost this year, which clobbered things a bit. And but things come back so quickly, don't they? If they get a late frost,
they do.
Bit of warmth, and before you know where you are, they're flowering again. It's wonderful.
Roses are just not the divas that they have the reputation to be. They are hale and hearty. And Greg and I were talking last night about 4 years ago. We had, I think it was a 9-week drought. And I thought the roses would all be dead, and none of them died through the drought. So they all made it, and with minimal watering, we didn't have a lot of water to put on them. So, you know, they just do bounce back. I was wondering, how long will your roses be blooming in England?
Well, they usually start sort of mid-June. Some of the varieties like Olivia, Desdemona, they'll start end of May, beginning of June. And so we get main flush June into July, and then August is usually a bit of a quiet month. There's some bloom down in the garden, but not a huge amount, but lots and lots of buds around. Mm-hmm. So usually from around end of August, beginning of September, then there's a mass of flowers again, and that'll carry on dribs and drabs, you know, well into October and even November. And even at Christmas time, you know, if you get a few days of lovely weather, then you can get some lovely blooms at Christmas time. So, but yeah, but the main time later on, late summer, is sort of September into October. And the English roses with their many buds, they can go on flowering for ages, really.
Michael, I wanted to ask you about Hampton Court this year. We had a friend of ours, Lynn Hunt, I think you know her, who she and her husband, Chris, had an opportunity to come and experience Hampton Court. And she had rave reviews about the David Austin stand.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was lovely to see her again. I haven't met up with her for a long time. We were in regular communication. And she's got lots of the Austins in her garden, mm-hmm. and doing very well, apparently, except when I think a bear came along.
A bear and a few of his friends.
Actually, that happened in my daughter's garden in Colorado, in Boulder. Apparently, a bear came along and pushed down the fence, which was rotten, and squashed one of her roses.
That's two reasons for the bear not to be popular.
Yeah.
The Hampton Court went very well. It was very hot, actually, and they were in the marquee, but we had a big stand there. It was about 20 feet by 20 feet or something like that. It created a big garden, and it looked absolutely superb with climbers and a picket fence around the outside and a little gravel path going through the middle. People loved it, absolutely loved it. It was very good. Very good indeed. And always get lots of people coming round. It was absolutely jam-packed, the stand. People wanting to look at the roses and smell them, and hopefully not too many falling. They sort of reach a bit too far and they fall over. You always get a few people falling over into their garden, and then we take the garden apart and we find odd pairs of spectacles hidden in the bottom. depends.
Well, the pictures that Lynn shared were absolutely beautiful. I mean, you do such a wonderful job with all those displays. You know, it looks like you're in a garden, you know, out in acreage, and here you are in a confined space. So kudos to your staff and to you for the beautiful things that you do at these in this small space.
Yeah, it's it was a challenge actually at Hampton Court this year. It was quite an early season. The climbers that we had lined up for there, we had to put them in the cold store for I think about 3 or 4 weeks. So in a cold store, but just a few degrees above freezing, and it's the sort of thing you really don't want to do to a plant that is nearly ready to fly, to put it in the cold store and try and hold it back. But amazingly, it worked. And they just about lasted the length of the show, I think. So, yeah, it looked really good.
As a former florist, I can tell you I understand the perishable flower problems that you have. Trying to get things to bloom on cue and trying to get things to last. And, oh, my goodness, you know, making those special times even more special with the perfect blooms. So, not easy. You know, it takes a lot of work. No. It looks easy, but it takes a lot of work to make that happen.
Yes. Yes, it's. I do a presentation on behind the scenes at Chelsea and Hampton Court, and people are amazed about what goes on. And of course, Chelsea, the press day at Chelsea, which is the royal day on the Monday. So in the morning, it's only press and sort of celebrities are allowed in, and then everybody's chucked out at 3 o'clock, and then the royal family, various members of the royal family, are allowed to come round. There's always a good number come to our stand.
Well, it just certainly is beautiful, and to have people come and enjoy it and have the Queen come, I mean, it has to be very rewarding.
Yeah, it is. It's great, actually. I'm going down next week, actually, to Frogmore, the Queen loves that place just down the road from Windsor Castle, and going to plant a whole lot of roses down there. So that'll be interesting. Around that garden.
Well, it's a tough job, but someone has to do it. That is definitely the sweet job, so enjoy your time there.
Well, Michael, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show, and I know our listeners love David Austin roses. They love hearing the stories about the fragrance of the rose, and always the stories behind the roses themselves. They're always so uniquely and aptly named. So thanks again for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And lovely to speak to you both, Chris and Teresa.
Well, friends, that's all the time we have for this edition of the Rose Chat Podcast, and we thank you for listening. Be sure and check out the David Austin Roses website at davidaustinroses.com. Until next time, happy gardening from your friends at Rose Chat.
You've been listening to the Rose Chat Podcast with Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington, expert rose gardeners who want to help you achieve the rose garden of your dreams. Don't miss an episode. Listen anytime on our website at rosechatpodcast.com or listen on the go via the Rose Chat app on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Share this podcast with your social networks and join us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by using the hashtag RoseChat. Join us next time for another edition of the Rose Chat Podcast. The Rose Chat Podcast is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.